ready, right?
So may the words of Holy Scripture turn into beautiful melodies in each of your hearts. We know when we're getting ready for something important in our lives, we prepare ourselves. If we're going to do a race, you know, a long race, we work out and we get ourselves ready. We're going to take an exam, school. We prepare ourselves, get ourselves ready for that. Whatever it is we're going to do, we get ourselves ready for it. Do a workout, so to speak. So, in Jewish tradition, one of the ways you did a workout was, you went into the desert. And you think about the desert, 40 years in the desert, the Jewish people were in the desert as they were moving, you know, from slavery into Egypt, into freedom, into the promised land. And, you know, you can imagine in that period when you're going somewhere like that, somewhere unknown, lots of tensions and strife develop among people and so on. You know, where's the food? And I'm running out of strength and I just can't go on any further. And my kids are sick and my husband's sick. And I, you know, all these kinds of things. So that wandering for 40 years, you can imagine 40 years, that was a long time and it was a place of high stress. So the psalmist says that it was in the desert that both Israel was tested, but also it was in the desert that God, Yahweh, was tested. In the sense, I think, that the Jewish people, this was a relatively new understanding of their God that they were being treated to. And they had to discover that they could rely on this God. God was tested in that sense. So Jesus now, the text tells us in the gospel here, it tells us that Jesus is led into the desert by the Spirit to be tested or to be tempted. So you'd say, well, why would God do that? He's leading him there. Well, because, of course, Jesus has to get ready for his mission. He has a mission coming, and he needs to be ready for it. So he has to be tested. What is this man made of? Is this person going to be prepared to carry out this mission, which, as we know as Christians, culminates with the cross, but also the resurrection? So he has to be ready. So we're given these temptations. And I would suggest to all of you, as I try to think about it myself, ask yourself the question, where am I in all of these temptations or testings? Am I in there anywhere? And in that way, maybe this can speak to you. Not just tell us something about Jesus, but also tell us something about ourselves. That'd be a helpful way to approach it. Now, of course, here you might say, well, Jesus is God as well as human, so therefore he had an extra edge that the rest of us don't have. So as he's going through this test, you know, he can always say, I'll just invoke my divinity, and that'll take care of the whole problem. And I guess we could think that way, but the tradition in Christianity, the theological tradition in Christianity is that the divinity of Christ does not diminish his humanity, but it makes his humanity even more really, truly, profoundly, sensitively human. It's kind of like a musician. Doris, you're a musician. And my wife is a musician. So when I play the accordion, sometimes practice my accordion, my wife has a master's in piano performance, you know, she'll go, And why? Because she has such a refined sense of the music. Much more refined than me. Doris, I'm sure in some ways this is true of you as well, that you, when we are really developed in something, we are just much more refined in what we feel. What might be a secondary intellectual point for some of us to a scholar who has spent his or her life studying on a certain area, it might be a terribly crucial thing. So, Christ is a human being, but he is just so profoundly human in a way which most of us, I suppose, could only dream of being. So, when he feels pain, he really feels pain. When he comes across sin, he really comes across sin. When he comes across temptation, he really knows temptation. He knows it in its depths. Would that we could know it so well, so profoundly. So let us not, I would suggest, say, well, Jesus had it easy because of his divinity. No. Not at all. He felt things we could only hope to feel. But anyway, as we go through these temptations, it's kind of interesting. There's a progression in them. First of all, and so you could ask yourself in your own life, this is what I would do, at least I was trying to think about it as I was meditating on this all week here, preparing for this homily. Is there something like this progression in temptations in each of our own lives, in my own life? So, for example, the first one is, you know, he's tempted to, you know, well, bread. Just, you know, the temptation to, well, you say, well, what's wrong with bread? Food, see. You do what I say and I'll feed you. Take care of you. So, you got to think about bread. You think, well, bread is a source of life. It's a source of energy. And you have like physical bread, something we eat. You can have intellectual bread, knowledge. Some people have social bread. They have social power. Some people are really good at schmoozing people over. They know how to, you know, give people, feed people socially. Good that way. So Jesus is being tempted then with this kind of power that he has to feed people, either physically or spiritually or socially or through affection. Whatever, it's a temptation. So we might ask ourselves, well, am I good at cooking food? I prepare a meal for my family all the time. What do I use the meal for? Do I use the meal for good purposes? Or do I use the meal in order to gain control over people? To get people in my good graces? Or I'm a good talker. I'm a smooth talker. I can feed people intellectually or socially or politically. I'm good at that. I can dole out the political bread or the social bread, psychological bread. Good at that. Or the intellectual bread, scholar. So why am I doing that? What am I using that for? Or if you're in school, what will I hope to use it for in the future? So that's one series of temptations. And then he comes to another temptation. And what you find is that as you have, you know, you discover we have these powers that we have. Physical powers, emotional powers, affectionate powers, spiritual powers, and so on. Then we come to the discover, golly, I really have a lot of power in me. I have a lot of power in me. That's that next temptation Jesus is faced with. That he's starting to get what I'd call the inflated head, the inflated ego. Takes him to the pinnacle of the temple, says, you know, now thrust yourself down. And you can command that the angels will come and rescue you. So it's like saying, you know, you now have such power. You've got such power that now you can do whatever you want with this power. That next stage of the temptation. Once we discover we have a certain amount of power, if we let it get way out of hand, it can begin to change who we are. And as it changes who we are, then we get into that kind of egomania, egocentricity, where power has distorted our personality. I pray, God, that none of us are there. But it is a temptation. It can be a temptation in our own each of our own little castles, me and the church, you and your family, you and your business, politicians in their political life. It's a temptation. And then the third one, you can imagine, well, that's pretty bad. Can we really get that far? First of all, let's think about ourselves, not about other people. If you're saying to yourself, oh, I know exactly who that is. I've met that person over there. Well, I would say that if we're kind of going that way, I think the best thing is for us to think about ourselves. Where am I going in that direction? Or maybe even just tending a little bit there in some aspects of my life. That would be how I would want to go rather than trying to point the finger at somebody else. Or if we do feel ourselves driven to point the finger to somebody else, and we just try not to, but we are, I think we should say to ourselves, there but for the grace of God go I. But the final stage, and this is hard to imagine, but the final stage is, you know, where Jesus now